Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Accurate 2020 census count is vital to economic growth, by M. Ray Perriman. Accurate census counts are far more than just a matter of interest. They are vital to ensuring adequate federal funding for various programs, appropriate representation in Congress, and an understanding of demographic trends to plan for the future. Over 300 federal programs rely on census data to allocate funds geographically, as do numerous state and local initiatives. For example, many resources and dollars for hospitals and health clinics are distributed according to census data. Important aspects of the social safety net, such as Medicaid and CHIP, SNAP, and housing vouchers, also depend on census estimates, programs that will become more vital as the economy continues to experience disruptions from the pandemic. The economic and fiscal costs of a significant undercount would be substantial. We recently estimated that the direct losses of federal funding in Texas could total nearly $21 billion over the 2021-30 period, or $2.1 billion per year on an average annual basis. Primary categories of funding reductions are in sectors critical to the ongoing well-being of the population and the economy, such as healthcare, housing, education, and infrastructure. Direct losses lead to negative ripple effects through the economy, multiplying the overall economic harms of an undercount. Over the decade, total losses include $39 billion in gross product and nearly 418,500 job years of employment. Even beyond these negative economic impacts, reductions in funding involve substantial downstream effects such as reduced wellness, less infrastructure improvement, greater food insecurity, and limited job training. The decrease in economic activity associated with funding losses would also generate a notable decrease in tax receipts to the state and local government entities, including cities, counties, schools, and special districts, even beyond the loss of direct funding. It should be noted that these measures were based on the expected undercount. In Texas, under normal circumstances, we appear to be heading for a much, much more dire outcome. In a year of myriad challenges, the importance of completing census forms can easily be lost amidst seemingly more pressing concerns. Collecting census data is difficult at best, and the additional complications from the pandemic are very real. Vulnerable populations, including young children and low-income families, those experiencing housing insecurity and immigrants, are particularly difficult to count. The recent executive order blocking the inclusion of undocumented immigrants for legislative apportionment, while unlikely to be upheld, can further depress participation. The decision to shorten the time for responses can only make things worse. An accurate census count is vital to assuring that communities receive the representation and funding they require. The effects of this year's count will persist throughout the decade, and the consequences of a significant undercount are profound. Fill out the census and stay safe. Airport Numbers Slowly Climbing, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. The prediction that has been that airport numbers will be slow to recover from the coronavirus pandemic. Midland's numbers are evidence of that, with boardings in July 62% lower year over year. However, the July report shows that the percentage decrease is shrinking. In June, the percentage decrease was 70% compared to June of 2019. Both months were a boost from the 82% drop in May and 89% decline in April. The fuel sales decline, 53% in July, remained near the level reported in June of 49%. Both are improvements compared to the declines in May and April. Lastly, parking revenues dropped 54% in July. That was the lowest decline since the start of the pandemic, as the city reported declines of 64% in June, 74% in May, and 77% in April. With 2 months left in the fiscal year, here is how the airport numbers stand. Boardings down 35%, fuel sales down 24%, and parking revenues down 31%. County's sales tax decline tops 40% in August by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. Midland County has been impacted greater than the city of Midland when it comes to sales tax collection. The Texas Comptroller reported this week that the county sales tax collection dropped 41.49% year over year in August. In terms of total dollars, the decline was more than $2 million compared to last year. The 41% drop followed consecutive months of 33% declines. The city of Midland reported a drop in August that was less than half, 21%. Year to date, the drop in the county has been 19% compared to last year. The $34.706 million collected is more than $8.2 million off the record pace last year. The city is off 11.8% compared year over year. August's collection is based on sales in June. Hundreds flock to Save Leave Rebels rally by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. Hundreds of people supporting the effort to keep LEE in the name of Midland's high school and freshman school, currently known as Robert E. Lee High School and Freshman High School, made the trek to the hallowed high school grounds Saturday to make their voices heard. The event was called the Save Lee Rebels Rally, and it was put together to save the name, history, and legacy of the Midland Lee Rebels. Midland ISD Board voted last month to change the name of Robert E. Lee Senior and Freshman High Schools. Earlier this month, the board approved members of a committee that has been tasked with recommending new names and determining the next steps regarding a mascot and school symbol. There is a vocal group in the community that wants to keep Lee. A second opinion article calling for using at least a Lee acronym appears in today's edition of the Reporter-Telegram. Supporters of Lee High School congregated Saturday to collect signatures for petitions and displayed school spirit in the parking lot south of the school. One petition is called for Midland ISD, the school board, Superintendent Orlando Riddick, and any subcommittee to cease consideration of any previous petitions or proposals regarding the name changing of Robert E. Lee High School, and to officially rename said school Midland Lee, L-E-E, Legacy, Equality, Education, High School, Rebels. The second petition called for the school to be named Midland L-E-E Carver, Legacy, Equality, Education, High School, Rebels. Both petitions state that the name change and other actions take place in the interest of achieving a more unified community while honoring the legacy and tradition of former students and staff. Organizers said the event included alumni from Midland High, Permian High, Odessa High, and former Carver High School, where black students attended before desegregation. "So we know Robert E. Lee is gone, and we are good with that," said Jalen Wilson, one of the event organizers. "We don't want any Confederate symbolism. We don't want any symbolism that offends anybody. That's not who we are. However, we are a family." The event continued as the temperatures approached 100 degrees. There was lots of maroon, chants of rebels, and support from those traveling down Neely Avenue who would hit their horn to the whoops and cheers of those at the event. Wilson, who grew up blocks from the campus, questioned the motive of those on the school board and said those at the rally wanted what was right. "Never did I see anyone balk in putting on a uniform or being a rebel," said Wilson, Lee class of 1994. "It is something to be proud of." Timothy Lyles, Lee class of 76, said he came to the rally because he believes it is wrong for anyone to impinge on anyone's heritage. "I don't care whose heritage it is, okay? And this is Midland's heritage. There was nothing wrong with the name of this school. No, the only thing wrong is what people choose to decide they want to believe about it. Lyles questioned the need for the school board and what he said was a minority of Midlanders to feel the need to change history. He also repeated the notion that there are better things to do with the money that it will take to rebrand this. The school district has not released any information on estimates on how much the change could cost. The school board should be more interested in our curriculum and our quality of education or quality of teachers. Changing the name of the school isn't going to change any of that. $300,000 or $600,000 plus to change the name of both schools, I can think of a lot of places it could go to improve education. Compromise would move Lee High School into the 21st century. An analysis by Robbie McCaslin. Open letter to the MISD School Board, Administration, Renaming Committee, and the citizens of Midland. We are a group of Lee High School alumni. We are writing this letter to propose compromise to the current issue with the name of our alma mater. First, we feel it is a shameful and tragic that the board and administration do not appear to have a concept or care anything about the distress, uncertainty, and unprecedented chaos and trauma they are causing to a large group of children and parents. The Lee name change is impacting, and all during a pandemic. We believe a more thoughtful and compassionate approach should have been taken rather than the rushed, knee-jerk one we are witnessing. Second, we do not believe a total name change is a fiscally responsible action. The estimates of implementing this action are rumored to be upwards of approximately $2 million. When you consider the scope of what would have to be replaced or rebranded, sports uniforms, helmets, gym floors, walls, hallways, we feel this estimate is grossly understated. Just to replace the new band uniforms alone will cost $300,000 or more. Consider for a moment how these millions of dollars, whether they are donated or taxpayer funds, could impact teaching, technology improvements, and support the general education of every MISD child. This is further supported when you consider the rankings of LHS and MHS when compared to other Texas high schools. According to the 2019 report from TexasSchoolGuide.org, a site that takes TEA and other data and grades Texas schools, Midland High ranks 1,271 out of 1,423, with a children at risk grade of D, and Lee High School ranks 1,374 out of 1,423, with a children at risk grade of D-. This puts these two schools in the bottom quarter of all high schools in the state of Texas. This has nothing to do from MISD or Midland to be proud of. Having this in mind, we are submitting what we feel strongly is a reasonable, compassionate, innovative, and fiscally responsible proposal for renaming Lee High School and Lee Freshman High School. You can view our full detailed proposal at leeproposal.com. However, for the sake of this letter, we have listed the proposal points below. Retain the name Midland Lee as an acronym, such as Leadership, Empowerment, and Equality. Retain Rebels as the name of a reimagined, redesigned mascot. Retain the school colors, maroon, white, and pewter. The new $300,000 band uniforms are pewter in color. Retain much of the school song. Replace Robert E. Lee with Midland Lee, or if necessary, reimagine it. Reimagine the other spirit and tradition symbols, items, such as the Dixie Dolls, removing any reference to the Civil War period. The reimagining process should be open, transparent, and inclusive. It should also be done in a creative and thoughtful manner. Our proposal may not satisfy everyone. However, we believe it goes a long way toward bringing about a compromise that moves the school into the 21st century and puts the Civil War symbolism behind us. It preserves the Midland Lee identity and proud culture, as well as our legacy and history, by keeping some semblance of the Midland Lee name, spirit, and traditions that have been built by every class from its inception. It maintains the invaluable Midland Lee brand, which is known far and wide, as was pointed out in the Midland Reporter-Telegram article by John Rogers. In closing, some of you may think the campus on Neely is just a bunch of buildings where exercises and education mechanically take place. To us, it is more than brick and mortar. It is an idea. It is an old friend. It is part of us and shaped part of who we are. We cherish this place, the idea. We hold the Midland Lee Rebels culture, spirit, and traditions close to our heart. We humbly ask that you consider joining us in saving all that we hold dear in a reimagined form by showing your support by signing our proposal at leeproposal.com. Thank you for your time. Robin McCaslin, on behalf of many students, alumni, and friends of the Midland Lee Rebels. Question and answers with Midland ISD's Chief Academic Officer, Lisa Goodnow. From Staff Reports. The 2021 school year begins Wednesday, and the Reporter-Telegram had a chance to catch up with Midland ISD's Chief Academic Officer, Lisa Goodnow. The following is most of that conversation in its entirety. The rest of the questions will appear after an article Monday about Midland ISD's online academy. MRT. Give our readers your experience with districts that are on the rebound like MISD is in terms of having failing schools and in terms of needing to provide a shot in the arm and go in a different direction. Lisa. Well, first, I'd like to say that, you know, I think one of the best things I've found about Midland is that this is a district in which I'm really struck by the commitment to students and the community commitment to really support families and have high expectations for where we're going. So I can't say that I've ever really been in a district exactly like Midland. I think that Midland has amazing potential and also an amazing history. So it's just this wonderful space in a small town feel, which I've experienced in Hayes, CISD, and Cedar Hill, which are both smaller districts. But then also, you know, some of the complexities of a big city, which I've experienced in Austin, and then just kind of being a neighbor to Dallas as well. And so that's a very interesting and unique space, right? It's the bustling economic center, right, with a thriving and sometimes kind of challenging economic base. That also, again, provides tremendous potential in the future for our students to excel. And then it's also got a lot of the small-town charm and commitment. That said, I have experienced in both of these settings in smaller arenas and in the larger city, working on campuses and in multiple campuses, and what you would call a turnaround setting. In every single one of those instances, I can tell you that approaching it with a community lens, approaching it with partnerships to your faith-based organizations and your city and county partners, and also your not-for-profit organizations and your families, and then really giving teachers every single tool they need in order to reach the students. That's how we do it. We also know that developing relationships is critical, and trust. And you really can't get to the academics until you have that trusting relationship with your students and your families, and the teachers have a trusting relationship with the administration. And then we also have it. We build on that trust in the community, and that's a restart with the social, emotional health, and well-being for all of us. And then the academics come. Is it possible to have academic achievement and improvement when there is the coronavirus pandemic? 100%. The way we look at it, honestly, it's an opportunity for Midland ISD to sort of think differently about how we measure academic success. I think one of the things that accountability does is show us where our gaps are. And so I appreciate and don't shy away from all at all from understanding where we can get better. I'm not afraid of that. I think the more we know about that, the more we move forward. But this year almost gives us a little bit of room to do that without the accountability, the threat of accountability. Not that we're not going to have accountability in the spring. We will. My eye is definitely on that accountability rating in spring 2022. Because what we do this year is, again, attend to the social, emotional needs of our teachers, our administrators, our students, and our families first, build that sense of community in our schools, and extend it beyond to partnerships. And then we do really laser-like focus analysis and diagnosis where kids are on their learning. One of the things I said, as if everybody in the nation and everybody in the state certainly is coming back, having that kind of 6 months, twilight zone educating, then we're all going to come back in a very different place. So if everyone's behind in a way, no one's behind, right? And that means that starting the 19th on Wednesday, we want to connect with our families, and we will. Everyone will be getting a lot of phone calls in the next few days from principals and teachers, and certainly on Wednesday morning. Thursday morning, Friday morning, connecting by phone and helping students navigate on the computer to see where they are. We'll be creating the community in a virtual setting. And then from there, we're going to be dropping in assessments that are not punitive. They're simply to learn where students are in their most critical fundamental skills. And we're going to focus on literacy and reading. And we're going to focus on numeracy and mathematics. And then, especially in our higher grades, we're going to see where students are in that content learning of social studies and science, and also career and technology. We're going to get a map of where students are in their learning. And then we can find kind of surgically get students in an individualized sort of pathway so that they can accelerate through any learning gap they have. And that's what this year gives us, an opportunity to see where students are in the beginning and then accelerate them to where we know they're mastering the content, skills, and knowledge. As we entered year 4 of System of Great Schools, the community is looking for positive progress. What should be reported to the community that is going to be different now that you are here, and what is going to be changed on your watch? I'm still learning sort of the lay of the land again, learning the lay of the land and wearing a mask and learning the lay of the land behind a computer screen and getting to know people. I think one of the most successful things any chief academic officer can do when they come into a community is learn it first before we start saying what we're going to change. You want to hear what's been working, and then you want to learn where we can make improvements. And then we collaboratively work together to say, you know what's going to be the biggest lift we can get first? And then learning what the expectations are from the community and from our trustees. So once we kind of determine that, I think we'll be able to start sharing. We have expectations that are laid out by our Board of Trustees, and those expectations are the kind of guiding point. We also have a school performance framework that measures the climate, which is critical for success, as well as closing those achievement gaps. So there are data points that we're going to be keeping an eye on that we absolutely will prioritize and move toward. The most important factor and person in a student's life on a campus is the teacher. The teacher is the number one variable that will make the biggest difference, and right behind that is the principal. I can be chief academic officer and say and do a lot of things, but if I'm not supporting those who see the students every day, whether it's on a computer screen or when we get finally back to face-to-face, those are the individuals in our students' lives, other than their families and caregivers, that make the biggest difference in where a student will succeed academically. And so that's why it's important for me to get to know what's been working, what are the bright spots, how do we build on those bright spots, and how we can replicate that as much as we can. And then also see what innovative strategies are working around the district and nurture those so that we're really able to reach that goal. What's your experience with System of Great Schools? I was in Austin when the System of Great Schools launched, and we looked at it very carefully. There were so many innovative initiatives that Austin ISD did not enter into it. So I'm really learning. What I'm incredibly impressed by is that we're getting tremendous technical support that is not necessarily being dictated to us, and that's refreshing. There's the support of a sort of craft your own strategic plan. Craft the way that you get there with national research backing you, and it's a refreshing partnership. And I'm really looking forward to learning more about it and leveraging it to help Midland ISD thrive. Can you point to any school district that you've learned about that has had success with System of Great Schools? We're working with several across the state. I'm not going to call out other districts right now. I'm going to really look at what Midland needs. There are some very intriguing initiatives, but I think what we need to do is figure out where Midland is right now. And then what's going to fit for Midland and what's not. Talk about how the chief academic officer interacts with and contrasts with the role of the chief transformation officer. Well, we connect daily, and my excitement about having the role of the chief transformation officer, and there was a similar role in my previous district, and I connected with that individual frequently as well. So I was associate superintendent of social and emotional learning and academics in Austin ISD, and that was at 81,000 students. And the transformation zone was smaller, but we would determine where there's consistencies across the system that need to be implemented. One of the things that's the most exciting for me is that when you have a transformation zone, it's kind of like a little incubator. It's an incubator for innovation, where you can develop and support innovative new techniques of teaching and learning, and then you crosswalk it back to the bigger system. So it's a constant conversation of what we can learn in the smaller system that you crosswalk back into the more traditional district system, and then vice versa. There may be areas where they need to adjust, and how can we, because they are our students, how can we support and inform that those adjustments were needed? Describe the interaction that will take place between MISD and your in-district charter's idea and third future. In my mind, it's a similar relationship. There are areas in which I think both systems can learn from each other. And that's what a partnership really is about. It really needs to be created to be a win-win. And that's how I would approach that partnership. What else can we tell our readers? One, I'm so excited to be here. I was raised in Central Texas, but I've been coming west for 35 years as soon as I could drive. Whether it was Balmoray or just any of the lakes that are close, another hour and a half away, whether it was to Carlsbad, the Fort Davis Mountains, I've been driving to Lubbock. I've been driving this way every summer and sometimes two or three times a year, and really am drawn to the people in West Texas. I love the landscape. I do. And I love the sky. My two youngest just graduated, one from high school and one from college. And I told them, you know what? I'm the one who's flying the nest. Y'all could stay in Austin. I've been here only like 5 weeks. But I feel like I've found home, and I'm really excited to get to know more people. Most importantly, I'm excited to help Midland students fulfill their dreams, and I think that this generation, especially after what we've been through in the last 6 months, is going to be the most flexible, agile, quick learners, and resilient. And I think it's a new generation, and I can't wait to help launch them into the future. This community's been in a downward spiral academically for more than a decade now. The last time a third party looked at it, we ranked 199th out of the top 200 largest districts in the state. Right now, we have more failed schools than El Paso and the Valley combined, the major districts there. From what you've been able to tell, how have we gotten here, and how does that change? And again, looking at specifics to how we are working as a school district to get there. Not necessarily what the community brings or anything else, because the inability of the school district got us to this point. How do we get our school district to get us out of this? Let me say a couple of things to that one in five short weeks. That's a tall, tall order. But I can tell you what I have, what I've looked at, what are my early senses. And first of all, the district did realize some improvements just a few years ago. And what we know about accountability systems, and they're like sausage machines. And so I think if you're paying too much attention to the accountability system and not enough attention to student growth, student individual growth, then the system is going to change every 4 or 5 years. It always has. I've been doing this for 30 years. What we know is that the system is going to change. And across the state, every district had more schools in trouble, whatever bad list it happens to be. It was improvement required, and now they're F's. When I think about the districts that I'm looking at, my sense in Midland, again, is that you've got this amazing, still very kind of smaller community feel, and in a smaller community, a kind of legacy. What I think that the district has realized is some bigger city complexities. And what the accountability system has done is kind of break open those gaps and point us to where we need to focus. And I see that as an opportunity. I don't see it as a failure. I think it's important to come with a strength-based approach, and that's how I've done it. I've overseen a school that was probably the second or third worst elementary school in the state. It took a little bit of time, and it was really hard, but it was all of the things I've talked about, attending to the social, emotional needs of students and making sure that they are healthy, making sure that their well-being is taken care of, and making sure that they literally have social, emotional competencies and that whatever crisis of trauma they might be in, we attend to that. You do that first. You build that trust with your students, your teachers, and your families, and then you really do hone in with hope on academic success. I've done that on multiple campuses and been able to do it and be part of that in a district that has demographics that were changing. But well over half the students were economically disadvantaged, 30-plus students who are English language learners. So in being able to really focus on student growth, student needs, unique needs of the community, and then building to where we can get. The accountability system will follow, but it's going to be a new mindset. I think that we need fresh eyes and a new mindset, and I think that's what I bring, and I'm excited to be a part of it. My theme for this year is community. We build a community with our students, our families, our teachers, and then that just continues to expand like a nest, like nested concentric circles right out to the city and into the larger community. DPS, 3 children among 5 killed in Crane County wreck, from staff reports. 5 people, including 3 children, died in a 2-vehicle wreck Friday morning on U.S. 385 in Crane County, according to a press release from the DPS. A GMC Yukon being driven by Bailey Nisbet of Baytown was southbound on U.S. 385, and a Toyota Tundra being driven by Carl Rice of McCamey was northbound. The SUV drifted into the northbound lane and hit the pickup, according to the release. Both drivers and 3 child passengers in the SUV died at the scene. The children, 2 girls, 5 and 3, and an 11-month-old boy, were from Baytown. The wreck occurred at about 5:30 a.m. Friday, 7 miles south of Crane. The posted speed limit is 55, according to the release. The crash is under investigation.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 16th, 2020. Section A, Honor Those Who Were Lost. It's been a year since Odessa's Darkest Day, by Michael Bauer. Odessans will remember those who lost their lives and those who were wounded in last year's mass shooting with a memorial service August 31st at Connection Christian Church, along with other events to memorialize the one-year anniversary of the tragedy. Because of COVID-19 guidelines, the service will be a drive-in event. People will be allowed to remember the tragic event from the safety of their own vehicles, as the service will be held outside in the west parking lot of the church at 8 p.m. The event will be sponsored by the Odessa Ministerial Alliance. Connection Christian Church Pastor Don Weeks said the point is to bring everyone together. The goal is to bring everyone together from different parts of the community to remember and to take strength from being together in a safe way, Weeks said. We'll invite people to stay in their cars and listen to their radio stations and be able to listen to the service that way. It'll be a 30-minute time of remembering and the opportunity to pray with different clergy of the area and leaders from different faith groups afterwards. Having outdoor services in a drive-in setting is nothing new for Connection Christian Church. The church began offering drive-in services after the outbreak of the coronavirus in the spring. It's been such a blessing to be able to be together, Weeks said. It's not the same, but it's better than being isolated. To be able to gather in your car, you're safe, and you can see people who have the same heart and mind as you do, and it encourages you to know that you're not alone. That's been true for us in worship and for several community gatherings. We've hosted the Leadership Odessa event for the Chamber of Commerce, the fundraising kickoff for United Way, and now this event for our community remembrance. It's important to be together, and this is a safe way to do that. Despite the COVID-19 outbreak, Weeks said it was important to gather together and be able to do it from a safe distance, as other ideas were thrown around as well. We knew that we needed to gather, and so at the Odessa Ministerial Alliance, we had different ideas thrown around about how to do that safely, Weeks said. We found out from the city what their plans were, and so we thought about how to get as many people as possible without any health concerns. And because our church has been doing this for 6 months now, we asked to help facilitate it. Weeks added that the ministers from different churches and leaders from different parts of the city will help out with the service. We're still putting together the program, but it'll be at least a dozen ministers, Weeks said. Dawn and her husband Joe have been helping out the community this past year, assisting those who were affected by last year's shooting to get help. On August 31st, 2019, gunman Seth Ader drove around Odessa and Midland, randomly shooting people. By the time Ader was killed by law enforcement near Odessa's Synergy Theaters, he had killed 7 people and wounded 25 others. That takes me back. From the prayer vigil that we were a part of at UTPB the day after the shooting, it was amazing because it was less than 24 hours after it happened, and we were all together, and everyone was bringing what they had to share in just a beautiful way of how West Texas and the Permian Basin rose up, Weeks said. And then the Odessa Ministerial Alliance also coordinated a meal for all the families who were affected. So we invited them all and had probably 30 people come so that they could know each other and we could begin to share with them about services in our community that would be counseling and support. Odessa Arts, the City of Odessa, the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, the Ministerial Alliances, and the Resiliency Center of the Permian Basin have planned events through August 31st. To memorialize the victims of the August 31st, 2019 mass shooting. Community members will be encouraged to share stories, photos, art, and thoughts on social media with hashtag Odessa Strong and hashtag A Time to Remember. The city's communications department will post testimonial videos from first responders, victims, and community members. Citizens and businesses are encouraged to place yellow ribbons on their doors. The chamber will use a digital billboard to spread a message of remembrance. Various buildings and art will be lit either yellow or blue for the week. The design and artist for the 831 art piece will be announced to the public. Odessa's Quilters Club is delivering handcrafted quilts to families and first responders. On August 31st, 32 yellow flags will be displayed at Memorial Gardens representing the victims, as well as a hashtag Odessa Strong banner on one of the bridges. In addition, 1,000 smaller flags will be available at the Family Resiliency Center, the Chamber, Odessa Arts, Connections Church, and area businesses. Community members can pick up their free flag and place it at Memorial Gardens. At 3 p.m. August 31st, the community is encouraged to observe 32 seconds of silence. The combined ministerial alliances are hosting a drive-in prayer vigil at Connection Christian Church, 8 p.m. August 31st. This will be a socially distant event with masks. Jim's Tall and Big Men Hangs It Up by Tony Venegas. For David Simpson, running Jim's Tall and Big Men's shop has been an integral part of his life ever since he was 6 years old. After 28 years as the owner of the longtime fixture in downtown Odessa, however, Simpson has decided that it was time for a change. He said he is retiring and closing up shop for the last time either in September or October, if time permits, citing in part to how the retail business has changed over the years. At one time, downtown was the heart of retail in Odessa and the surrounding areas, Simpson said. One of the reasons that we stayed downtown was because so many of our customers were from out of town. But we've seen with the advent of technology that a lot of people won't travel those distances anymore and do most of their shopping online. Simpson acknowledged that the business was put in a tough spot due to the COVID-19 pandemic after the store had placed its orders for the spring. He looked at options from moving into a smaller space and redeveloping the current space downtown at 423 North Grant. However, he ultimately decided to sell the property altogether. It was a bittersweet decision, but Simpson believes it was the right one to make. There's a part of me that's happy because of the way the industry is changing, Simpson said. Retail is no longer a person-to-person business. It's who's got the lowest price. At the same time, I'm going to miss my customers and people I've known for 40 years, because usually if you stop here, you're always going to shop here and not going to lose your shoulders or your size. Simpson has plenty of sentimental memories about the store that first opened in 1973, about a half a block away from its current location. It's where the store's namesake, Jim Simpson, and his wife Gladys founded the store together. David and his sister Linda helped their parents out at the store, and it's where he made his first solo sale and got his start in the business world. He was a buyer and a store manager at Dillard's before returning to Odessa to run Jim's, beginning in 1992. As the years went on, the business model continued to change, and suddenly Simpson said that the store was one of the last independent big and tall men's clothing stores in between Fort Worth and Phoenix. The big department stores have all expanded their presence with big and tall clothing, he said. They may not have the level of service or product knowledge, but they have more locations. A lot of suppliers no longer want to do business with individual stores and have to round up 150 to 175 orders, so it's now getting harder to have things made. The real estate company that the building was sold to has told Simpson that they have several ideas as to what Jim's will become in the future. However, no plans have been finalized. As for what's next, Simpson said that he plans to devote more of his time working with United Way of Odessa. Simpson is the organization's president-elect and will be taking over that role soon. He also plans to spend more time at home with family and having more opportunities to visit his sister, who currently lives in College Station. It's going to be a different feeling over the next few months, but Simpson said he's looking forward to focusing on the next chapter of his life. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, he said. When I was younger, we'd have between 30 and 50 people for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and now it's just me, my girlfriend, and her daughter. The holidays are hard because I miss the giant extended family. But I've never in my life had a holiday season off, so I decided that this year, for the first time in my life, I'm not going to work the holidays. First Odessa Christian starts Monday, by Ruth Campbell. For First Odessa Christian Academy, the first day of school is just hours away, and it will be face-to-face. Head of schools Tyler Press said the campus, located at First Baptist Church, will offer kindergarten through eighth grade this year and has 120 students enrolled. Seven new teachers were hired this year, bringing the total to 15. The plan is to add grade levels every year up through high school, Press said. The decision to go back for face-to-face instruction was made because the school has smaller class sizes and large classroom spaces that they felt would meet safety requirements for COVID-19. The facilities are 60,000 square feet, so we have a large area to be able to utilize for our students, he said. On a recent Monday, teachers were undergoing professional development in-house. Where we had to pivot quickly at spring break to be able to move to all online learning, we are front-loading all of our professional development this year for when or if we have to go to online learning. If a student were to get sick, or if we would have to self-isolate We can do it quickly. We're utilizing Google Classroom. We are one-to-one. All of our students are provided with iPads, so our teachers are just getting that necessary time to have everything already in place for students. So if they do have to go home, they'll still be able to continue learning, Press added. During spring break in March, First Odessa Christian Academy transitioned everyone to Google Classroom and Google Meets. Then we sanitized everything and put packets together. Families came through and picked up their stuff and then took it back home, which at the time we were told was going to be 2 weeks, and then it was a month, and then it was the rest of the year, Press said. My staff did a great job with that. Our elementary students had 4 hours a day of face-to-face instruction through these meetings, and then our middle school went from 8 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon with classes, so they still rotated like a normal class schedule. They just went from teacher to teacher virtually. Parents were understanding about why this had to be done and complimentary of the online experience, Press said. Kathy Christensen, a first grade teacher, and Kelly Jenkins, a kindergarten teacher, participated in training August 10th. Both are starting their second year at First Odessa Christian. It's going to have some challenges with just trying to integrate as much as we can digitally so that if we do have to go virtual again, we are on point and our kids are prepared for that because we're doing a lot more tech-based stuff in class as well. So when they do go home, they're not like, we've never seen this before. We're making sure that our kids are prepared for that, Christensen said. We're hoping that we don't have to go home, but we want to be ready for that eventuality. Jenkins said she is looking forward to starting face-to-face instruction, just in case they have to go virtual, because then she will have started to build relationships with her students. She added that it's like everyone is a first-year teacher again, trying to navigate this new form of instruction. Jenkins said they will go from, for example, using manipulatives to not using manipulatives, and young students need to hold things and touch things. Not being able to do that is going to be quite the challenge, as is keeping students 6 feet apart, Jenkins said. They want to be in each other's circles, so having to teach that on top of our academics is going to be quite a sight, Jenkins said. Press wife Alicia is an executive director of leadership for Ector County ISD. Tyler Press was also an administrator for the district before moving over to First Odessa Christian Academy. This is the second year the school has been in operation. We got some great ideas from ECISD as well. Alicia is always a great source just because of her expertise, but we started off different. From the day school started, every student had their own device, so we were already one-to-one from the get-go, Press said. While the school is prepared, they are still getting guidance from all over, and the information keeps changing. We're all kind of drinking from a fire hydrant right now. We're doing our part, so we'll have regularly scheduled hand washing, Press said. All of our classrooms have sinks for elementary students, so they'll be able to wash their hands in class. We are providing all of our students with masks. We're following the state governance that anyone who is 10 and older must wear a mask every day, except while in sports. We are, as much as possible, separating students by 6 feet, even in the classroom. When they're in choir, unfortunately, they have to be 10 feet apart. We are providing all of our teachers with face shields as well as masks, so we have all those ready for our teachers. We are following all CDC and TEA guidelines, so we definitely want to make sure the learning environment is as safe as possible for both students and staff. CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and TEA is the Texas Education Agency. We have provided school supplies for all our students this year, so we're limiting even exposure for our parents to have to get out and purchase those school supplies. Our PTO, the Parent Teacher Organization, they are reaching out to families and asking for cleaning supplies for the classrooms to be provided. We have already had families step up and they're purchasing air purifiers for the classrooms and microwaves since we'll be eating in the classrooms. Students will be able to warm up their lunches. Of course, we've been stockpiling Clorox wipes and hand sanitizer. The custodial crew here does a fantastic job of cleaning surfaces and having all the appropriate sanitizers, he said. Press said the families who have students attending the school are excited to return. When they heard that we were still planning on starting face-to-face August 17th, we had lots of students who were excited to come back, he added. The campus has even seen an increase in students. He added that Odessa had wanted options for their children. We have gotten praise from our families, and we are blessed that even though the pandemic and the oil field cutting jobs, we still have been able to increase enrollment, Press said. I really think that speaks to the quality of the education that's going on in the classroom and the work that the staff has put in just to create an infectious school environment in a good way. The big thing that we hear is that they want faith-based, smaller class sizes and stuff like that, so we're happy to be able to accommodate them with those, Press said. The campus is fully accredited with TEA, which Press said was a big deal for the school, and they hire only certified teachers. Last year really kind of felt like it didn't have an ending to the story. It was a little sad that it was our first year, and we had great plans for an end-of-year celebration field day and awards ceremonies and everything like that. It just felt like it faded into black. But we did have a reverse parade where the students drove through and they got to throw water balloons and silly string at the teachers. We cheered for them, which was a nice closure to it, Press said. He said when teachers came back August 5th, that was kind of his first day of school too. It was a mix of excitement and anxiety, just kind of the unknown and what it's going to look like this year. But my teachers have done a great job getting their classrooms ready and labeling tables and desks for their students to come back and decorating. So it's been great, he said. Band and choir are being offered for middle school students, and Michael Neiman, formerly with ECISD, is the athletic director. We'll continue with our cross-country and volleyball for the fall, and then basketball season, followed by track and tennis. He's been great. He's been working with other local schools, getting the schedule ready for all of those, Press said. Parents are not allowed inside the building to drop their children off at this time. They are dropped off at the front door and ushered in by school staff. Some of our kindergarten parents are a little bit heartbroken because they like to make sure their student is doing well and able to just manage that new adventure. So they're a little heartbroken for that, but they do understand the safety protocols. Press added that First Odessa Christian will conduct a staggered release using multiple doors around campus so everyone isn't using one door. Limited spots are still available at the school, so if anyone is interested in enrolling, they can either call the office at 432-339-0770, or they can look the school up online at focacademy.org. Press said they can apply online, but they have to come in and register in person.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Leo and a moon in Cancer until 12:38 a.m. when the moon enters Leo. Happy birthday for Monday, August 17, 2020. Versatile, intense, and sometimes explosive, you need to be working to be happy. The lockdown has thus been challenging, although some of your ideas at this time will turn out to be masterpieces. You succeed brilliantly when it is over. If single, you pursue ardently, but with your solitary temperament, you might stay unhitched. If attached, your bond is both passionate and tempestuous. Aries gives as good as they get. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. The good times are finally in full swing and roll on through today. A merry romantic dance involving more than one prospect is possible. This influence is exceptionally creative, too. Give tangible expression to your original ideas. Tonight, don't stop. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. A home remodeling project or new residence might be desirable. Talk to contractors today and make up a budget. Modernization of your surroundings would be pleasing. You are ready to go after too much waiting. Tonight, family discussion at dinner. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. You're able to employ your natural promotional skills effectively today. Good conversation and journeys of the mind and body are always appealing to you. The pace will be quick. Get organized and much can be accomplished. Tonight, return all calls and emails. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. There can be some cash flow situations to resolve. It is a good time to bless your wallet and bank book. Welcome all that is fresh and unexpected. Today can bring surprise announcements from others. Tonight, follow all laws, directions, and rules scrupulously. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Dramatic and proud, you glow with a magnanimous warmth that honors your ruler, the sun. Your appearance and personality charms others. Pursue creative outlets and business opportunities. Tonight, either a close relationship improves or a new one is drawn to you. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Meticulous and analytical, you find satisfaction in being helpful. Today, helping others who are less fortunate brings you joy. Take time for quiet reflection. Explore your subconscious needs through meditation. Tonight, begin your own private journal and start writing. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Healing and growth are due. A reunion of some type can be planned. A new cycle directly related to discovering personal happiness starts. A larger-than-life quality prevails, but stay grounded and keep perspective. Seek efficiency. Tonight, a change of heart is beginning. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 2 stars. Today creates a limiting and somewhat frustrating career situation. Accept others as they are and use your creative ideas constructively. Recognition will be yours following this trying and testing time. Tonight, blitz out in front of the TV. Enough is enough. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Taurus and Scorpio companions can offer valuable insights or introduce you to groups or mentors who will pave the way toward personal awakening. Scheduling time for regular meditation will help you grow. Tonight, establishing these patterns will nurture your psyche. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 4 stars. An old demon no longer troubles you. Inwardly, you will feel more peaceful and strong. New financial strategies are worth considering. Your legendary analytical ability is in top form, enabling you to find solutions to pesky problems. Tonight, take the night off and relax. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18, 4 stars. A really odd situation can develop with an interesting but eccentric person. Do not overreact. Allow it to be transitory and chalk it up to experience. Legal matters can be brought to a successful conclusion. An important new relationship develops. Tonight, date night. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. The cell salt for Pisces is iron phosphate. Pisces rules the feet, and this immune system enhancer boosts steadiness while assisting with the distribution of oxygen throughout the body tissues. Tonight, find it in apricots, pumpkin, raisins, molasses, yeast, sauerkraut, and chamomile. Born today, actress Mae West, 1893, poet Ted Hughes, 1930, actor Robert De Niro, 1943.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.